I could amplify on that vignette. I had drafted the impeachment resolution for Congressman Jones. And I want to try to explain the background and reason for its urgency. When the Founding Fathers gathered in Philadelphia in 1776, these were people who were erudite. They had examined the history of conflict. And it appeared that it was the executive branch that regularly was leading people into war, whether it was David or otherwise. Because, they concluded, during times of conflict, the executive gets all the power, the taxes, the money, the secrecy, the contracts, the footprints in the sands of time. And therefore, the executive had concocted danger out of thin air in order to justify warfare. Therefore, the members universally and unanimously insisted that only the Congress of the United States, which did not confront a conflict of interest in entering war, would not increase but would have its power diminished in times of war, could vote a war resolution. Only the Congress of the United States, and indeed the first president, George Washington, who himself presided over the Constitutional Convention, stated, before any president can use the military offensively, Congress must provide a declaration of war. Thomas Jefferson needed 10 statutes to use force against the Barbary pirates who were engaged in an international crime of piracy. Now, why did the Founding Fathers believe it was very important to set a very exacting threshold in order to move the country from a state of peace to a state of war? The definition of war, ladies and gentlemen, is it makes what's customarily murder legal. It makes what's customarily murder legal. In other words, you return to a state of nature. As Cicero said, in times of war, the law is silent. It isn't that there can never be occasions that justify war. We couldn't have responded to Japanese attack at Pearl Harbor with indifference. But you need to have very high and exacting standards of provocation to justify war, because you return to a state of nature, whereas Thomas Hobbes wrote in The Leviathan, life is poor, brutish, nasty, and short, even for the superpowers, ultimately, who will go the same way of the Roman and all other empires unless they step back from the precipice. Because the Founding Fathers stated repeatedly, freedom and liberty cannot exist in a state of perpetual warfare. Those instruments of authority and power that were initially concocted to fight foreign danger will come back domestically and destroy liberty at home. Ladies and gentlemen, that is exactly what has happened since 9/11. We are told at the outset, we must fight them in Kabul. We must fight them 6,000 miles away, or else we will end up fighting them in Washington, D.C. That justified Guantanamo, preventive detention without accusation or trial, unilateral use of force by the president in secrecy, intercepting our phone conversations, emails, and otherwise without warrants. Now, over 10 years later, the last iteration of the National Defense Authorization Act, one of the most vocal proponents of war and belligerency, Lindsey Graham of South Carolina, the famous state that shot the Union at Fort Sumter. He said, in defending the continuing authority of the president to use not only law enforcement but the military to detain American citizens and to dispatch them to Guantanamo Bay, because they're an ever-present danger to the country, if they were somehow associated, whatever that means, with a group associated with al-Qaeda. He said, ladies and gentlemen in the Senate, we need to bring the battlefield here to the United States. We can't keep it in Kabul. If those terrible people come to the United States, and we know that they could be here, even if they're an embryo, you can't wait for that embryo to grow 60 years later, turn into a mushroom cloud. You need to stop now. You need to exterminate it now. We may need to go to lobotomy so they can't learn chemistry and physics to develop these IEDs. We can't be timid, you know, otherwise that mushroom cloud keeps coming up. Right? And that's where we have. Now, what was initially created to capture and detain persons abroad, now right in the United States. And as far as legal architecture goes, the president's claimed authority to employ predator drones against anyone who he decides in secret is an imminent threat. And imminence no longer means soon to happen. It could be a year from now, 2 years from now, 3 years from now. In other words, it means whatever the president wants it to mean, as he borrows from Humpty Dumpty and Alice in Wonderland, which is where we are. It means he can use the predator drones here, on us, on me, on anyone who says something, and he says, well, you're saying something that'd be sympathetic to the enemy. Wow. That means, ladies and gentlemen, all of our liberties, including our right to life, is not a matter of right. It's the indulgence of the president. He has chosen, for political reasons, not to vaporize us. It's not something that should let you sit with equanimity. Really? That sounds like vassalage rather than citizenry. And even if we have a president who, because of his own moral compass, if that's not a contradiction in terms, would refrain from using predator drones in the United States. Think about the principle. It lies around like a loaded weapon, ready for any successor, and sometimes at one point it'll be Caligula, to use at the claim of any need. Is that what our posterity will inherit? Those yet to be born will inherit vassalage and serfdom rather than citizenry. And I think about this daily as to what historians will say about us in this room and elsewhere in the United States. Will they say what Tacitus wrote about Rome as it degenerated from a republic to an empire? The worst crimes were dared by a few, willed by more, tolerated by all.